Hello, my name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book. Hello, my name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago. It has so many awesome parts, you simply won't believe how much this book can change your life.
Hello, my name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast. Read all about it now.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Knock, knock! Who's there? Oh! It's Shotgun Full of Buckshot! Hello, fellow creeps. So I saw the movie Heretic. The one where, Hugh Grant harasses two young ladies in every single way except for the way that Hugh Grant harasses ladies. Anyway, I was in the parking lot with my girlfriend, Booberella, and she looks at me and she goes, "Hey, Sewerfoot, what the hell was that all about?" And I didn't want to look dumb, so I said, "Well, it's something about iterations and copies of copies and church." She's like, "What the hell does that mean?" And I said, "You know, like, you're kind of like an iteration of Barbarella and Vampirella and, Elvira, Mistress of the Night." And then she said, "Oh, I see. Just like you're a copy of the Crypt Keeper. That's why your name is the Chris Keeper, and you have the same voice." And I said, "No, not at all like that, because I do not look like him." And then she grabbed the back of my head and jammed my face into a car mirror. I'm really looking forward to the next date. Well, enjoy the movie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Vault of Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am your host, Jason Giaconetti, but I am not alone on this journey into the unknown. I am joined by Two True Freaks OG himself, Chris Honeywell.
Oh, by the way, the walls and ceiling have metal in them. Is that okay?
And that chuckle you heard was none other than the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
That's you making me laugh now. I got like three different quotes going through my head. Do I sing the Hollies? Do I sing Radiohead? Nah, we don't talk about Taco Bell.
that was one of mine. And last but not least is my brother, Luke Giaconetti.
Because I want to know the truth, and because the only way out is through. Robert Frost, Swamp Thing.
That was my alternate.
So the thing was, I had that we don't talk about Taco Bell. But then the other one I had was, with great power comes great responsibility. Spider-Man? Voltaire.
Spider-Man.
All right, folks. And if you don't know what we're talking about by now, you've been sheltered. Sheltered is probably the best way to say it. No, it's, we are talking about the 2024 movie Heretic, starring the incomparable Hugh Grant in a role he was born to play. Because he's been born.
Let me just say this.
Yeah.
Let me just say this to our listeners. If you want to watch Heretic, make sure that you get 2024 film called Heretic. And do not get The Exorcist 2, The Heretic, which is from 1977 and is a totally different movie and does not have Hugh Grant in it.
So just a word of warning. And you would have a better time hammering nails into your scrotum than watching
Exorcist. The Exorcist? Yeah. So, So just to make sure everyone, again, I know we do this all the time. I know we always say, we kind of think like, but this is a, just forewarning you now, if you have not seen Heretic, we are going to ruin all the spoilers in this thing. And they did a good job about kind of keeping certain things under wraps. So if you want to see this, you got to make sure you see it before you hear us talk about it, because we're going to tell you all the ins and outs. And then all of a sudden you'll be like, oh man, that's all the secrets. Yeah, they're all the secrets. So
if you want to go pause your podcast and go over to Max or HBO Max or HBO Go Max or HBO Micro Max or whatever it's called this month.
Yeah. Mini Max.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and go watch the movie and then come back. That's okay. You can download the show twice. That's perfectly cool.
We'll take it.
So you have two directors here. It's Scott Beck, and Scott Beck is known more as a writer than anything else. He's actually the writer on Heretic as well, but he's the writer on A Quiet Place. He was a writer on 65. The Quiet Place equals The Boogeyman. He gets a writing credit and stuff like that as well. And then your other director is Brian Woods, and Brian Woods was a writer on A Quiet Place. It's like these guys are kind of a writing duo. They work together, which is, you know.
Yeah, well, actually, the production house was, I think, Beck Wood, right? Yeah, so this is their jam all the way.
Yeah, but they both get the writing and directing credits on this movie. And I just wanted to throw one thing out. We're going to talk about, obviously, the movie story, but Sophie Thatcher, who plays Sister Barnes, for those of you who haven't seen Companion yet, that's different. But she's the
titular companion.
Yeah, I mean, just the woman in Companion. That's who she is. So if she looks familiar to you.
Female lead.
Yeah, that's right. Female. Does she look familiar? That's who she is. And I hadn't seen Companion.
I haven't seen it yet either.
So I have Companion. I'm like, it's one of the ones I'm like, I watch. I'm like, but then I saw the trailer. I go, wait, that looks like the chick from Heretic. And I'm like, oh, it is. So, there's that. So I just want to make sure.
Amusingly, on Max,
yeah.
Right now, if you watch Heretic, the suggested movie it suggests is Companion.
Yeah.
So they know it's like what side your bread is buttered on.
Yeah. So, So, yeah, so, okay, so Heretic, let's see. So I saw this, it's just one of the movies when I did the podcast for Bots, Bugs, and Babes, I talked about my favorite movies of 2024 or whatever. This makes my list. I had this up there with, like, The Substance. I had this up there with, like, Late Night with the Devil. I had this up there with, like, just a movie that some people were, grossly disappointed with. I don't know what they were expecting, but this movie, I think, does exactly what it says. Once you kind of get into it, it does what it says on the tin. And I think that's the key with this, is that, so to me, this is not some cookie cutter, studio. This is an A24 movie. This is not some cookie cutter safe kind of whatever movie. This is in the lines of like Long Legs and Immaculate and Late Night with the Devil and The Substance. These are the movies that we need to see. This is the horror that's pushing the boundaries that we got in 2024, which I think was a welcome thing. So,
yeah, I knew nothing about this other than the movie existed.
I had like three people recommend it to me, and they kept saying, it's not what you got to watch it. It's not what you'd expect from the trailers. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen the trailers. And I thought it looked really good. And I'm like, oh, this looks really well written. And it's got Hugh Grant in it. So they're putting some money into the cast and stuff. So it was more like I was going into it expecting not what I would expect, but it was what I expected, which was really good.
But some of that has to do with the fact that I think when we hear a movie's, you know, like anytime we have a horror movie and people are recommending it to us, knowing how jaded we might be, how well-versed we might be, however you want to think about it, right? But it's true. If you think about the kind of movies that we recommend, it's like, oh my God, you got to watch this. You got to see this. You got to whatever. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love schlocky, slasher, whatever movies too. I love those things, right? But I wouldn't say to you guys, oh my God, this movie's amazing. This, you got to like really watch this. Like, yeah, this one's a lot of fun. Like, this movie I would not describe as a lot of fun. This is a movie you need to watch and pay attention to kind of thing. Whereas, like, you know, if you were watching like Hard Eyes, the new horror movie that came out for Valentine's Day, that's a lot of fun. It's kind of campy and silly and whatever, and you don't have to take it too seriously. This one, you like, I had said to Kelly, you want to sit down and watch this with me? She goes, I don't know. I'm like, I don't really like horror movies. I'm like, this isn't horror in like, there's going to be like the some of the horror movies we sit down and watch. I said, but this is the kind of horror movie you would enjoy because it makes you think and it questions, and the horror is subtle at times, and it's terrifying literally at some points in this movie by way of what's happening, what we're seeing on the screen, not in that it's horrific like blood, guts, and gore, because there's actually tension. Very little blood, guts, and gore.
It's done with dialogue,
tension and atmosphere,
dialogue and body language mostly. Know, when for the creepiest parts. But like what did surprise me about this movie is it was involving two Mormon girls going door to door. And there's just so many predictable ways that you could have written those girls and their situation and everything. And, you know, and been like, oh, you know, we'll portray the Mormons as like culty door knockers. But like they gave them such good characters, and the actresses were really good too. That are, you know, they gave that, you know, they made them not like culty church members, but intelligent people who've, you know, they've had like a lot of these discussions and stuff, you know. And I mean, what I thought was the greatest is the first scene is them basically it's like Mormon porn talk. But it's a very complicated conversation, and you know, and it's very awkward in a teenage girl sort of, you know, two teenage girls, like one not wanting to admit that she was watching porn and stuff, but she wanted to tell her porn story to her friend. And it was great, you know, it was very, very, and both of those characters are, you know, just given so much depth in this story, and are, you know, are treated like they're you know, their intelligence isn't insulted.
No, they're not characters at all. They're people.
And you know, and when you're like, we need somebody though to turn up the creep factor in this movie, but not like, you know, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre creep factor. Who do we get? Who? Oh yeah, Hugh Grant. Yeah, that, you know, Kevin Spacey's too much. Hugh Grant, just right.
Well, to be fair, the last decade or so, he's done more commercial stuff that hasn't been rom-coms. Like, he's one of the heavies in the Dungeons & Dragons movie from a couple of years ago, and he's chewing the scenery in that and having
I think he's, like, he's having fun, you know, and...
Well, I mean, I'm sure, at a certain point, any of these Shakespearean-trained actors, it's like, I can do the super serious stuff, like... Give me like something fun to do. Like, why wouldn't you? Same thing with God, what's his name?
Rickman pestered Kevin Smith to be in Dogma.
Yeah.
You know,
Who the hell's the guy in Taken? Jesus.
Qui-Gon. Liam Neeson.
Jesus.
Liam Neeson. Was,
yeah. Don't know how I couldn't pull that.
I mean,
he's clearly just doing whatever the hell he wants to do now. You want to keep paying me to do the old man action movies? I'll keep doing them.
Yeah, well, Liam Neeson, I mean, you want to talk about synchronicity. Last night, we watched Schindler's List because my daughter needed to watch it for her History of World War II on film.
I was going to say, that's not really like a Saturday night popcorn movie.
No.
That's
that's a heavy Saturday night.
Well, before you needed it for school.
But the point is that, you know, Liam Neeson can do whatever the hell he wants because he did Schindler's List, and he's always always have done Schindler's List. And it's like, by the way, I'm not a serious actor. Well, I did Schindler's List. It's like, oh, that's right, he did do that. Yeah. You know, so he doesn't have to worry about it.
The 1-2 punch of Darkman and Schindler's
List. I was going to say Darkman. He was Darkman first.
Somewhere between Darkman and Schindler's List lies the truth.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So just real quick, because Chris was talking about the opening scene. So again, Sophia Thatcher is Sister Barnes, and that's Chloe East plays Sister Paxton. And you can tell very quickly that that Chloe East's character, Sister Paxton, is the one who seems, at least when she comes, to be very naive and not kind of doesn't kind of understand as much, like, is portraying that she doesn't understand much of the world, but she's not necessarily that she's dumb, but she definitely comes across as being more sheltered. Trusting. And yeah, right. Whereas clearly, Sister Paxton, our sister,
has some edge.
Yeah. Yeah. She like, you know, Sister Barnes clearly has seen some, you know, stuff in her life.
Yeah.
And then we learned that her dad died and that she died in a Taco Bell and it's all these things. And you're like, okay, like that's why her character is so like harsh the way she is. Not say harsh, but like she's much more aware and attuned to what's going on. Which is great.
She's got a little hot topic in her.
Well, it's not even so. It's because she was a convert. She didn't grow up in the church. So you have the outsider's perspective already on her end.
Yeah.
But I mean, to be fair, the few Mormons that I have met are exactly like, I can't remember her name. The one that we've
Paxton.
Said. Paxton.
Yeah.
So the thing for me is that I know quite a few Mormons because we're friends with a few Mormon families.
I'm related to Mormons.
And I'm also good friends with somebody whose family was Mormon and he left the church and all that. So I get a lot of that. I have, just odd to me, because I've run into numerous Mormon missionaries and they've all been dudes.
They do have females.
I have been told, but I'm just saying I've never run into one. In fact, the second date my wife and I went on, we were at Clemson. I know a lot of my stories start that way.
It's my time at Clemson.
Anyway, so one of her girlfriends was the Mormon missionaries were stopping by and they couldn't go visit her because she was a unmarried female living by herself, right?
Yeah.
In an apartment. So her friend called my now wife and said, hey, you got a boyfriend now, right? Do you guys want to come over for dinner so that the missionaries can come over, right? So that was my introduction to Mormonism, was exactly that. It's like, oh, okay, they can't be alone with a female, right, without another male present. And that was also the night that I had to correct a missionary who told me that Deftones sang Enter Sandman. And I said, I think you'll find that Metallica sang Enter Sandman, friend. He goes, well, I have it on CD. I was like, and let's take a look at the liner notes, shall we? So you see where it says Hetfield and Ulrich? You notice how their names aren't on any other of these songs? Like, oh, wow. It's like, see, we're all learning stuff tonight, man. You know?
Oh, my God.
To be fair, the best bands are associated with Satan. So it's not like, you know.
Yeah, everybody knows that. You know?
In my post-college apartment, I lived with one guy who, my friend John, who was a scrawny, hippie kind of skateboarder guy.
Wait, are you describing you?
Yeah, no. Your air quotes up to the mic.
Quote roommate? Unquote yeah, okay, friend, roommate.
Yeah. I'm yeah, asking no, for a friend, I swear.
No, he was. Yeah, no, I was just a smelly hippie. He was a little seedier looking. If you can imagine that, just a little. And then we had our roommate, Vanessa, who was a photo major, and she was a like punk, sort of sloppy punk rock girl, and liked taking pictures, getting all her friends to take nude pictures. So we would sign up to have Book of Mormons delivered to our house by missionaries. And then they would come over and we'd invite them in. And right in the door was one of Vanessa's pictures of her laying on the ground, legs behind her head, and just a big moon with her with the old
Furberger,
the old vagina right in the middle, and these were like punk rock scrawled songs or voice from the hole, and that was like on our entranceway into our kitchen when you walked in the front door. And then I would tell them all the Joseph Smith stories that I knew. I'm like, did you know Joseph Smith was wanted in my hometown? That's how I found out about him.
It was the
golden Indian leg scam he was pulling.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You see, I almost feel like egg. I should. If they want to talk about Joseph Smith, maybe I should talk to them about John Smith. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, are you familiar with the invisible hand? Have you accepted the invisible hand as your Lord and Savior?
Oh my God!
Let me holler at you real quick about the Wealth of Nations. Okay, just listen to me for a minute.
Are you saying the invisible hand can't hit a curveball?
But I'll tell you what, it was always a
Jesus
very
Christ,
friend...
Harris. Let's not start a
whole war.
always very friendly, and we always had good conversations. I feel bad for them walking into like dirty bongs on the table and like Frank Miller comics and
Frank Miller comics
just laying around. Frank Miller comics, bad enough. Hey, my cousins were Mormon, and like whenever they would come to visit, they were Mormon because their parents were Mormon, so they weren't really super religious about it. Yeah. But the poor kids, they couldn't drink whole milk, and their mom always just mixed up powdered milk for them. So when they would come to visit us and their parents would go off to do something, they'd just be hanging around the house. They'd be like, got any milk? And just, oh. Drinking whole milk, just like, oh my God. Do you have any soda? Yes, we have this Jolt Cola.
Let's look into my veins.
So real quick, I just want to throw this. So both Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East were both actually raised Mormon, which allowed them to have an insight, obviously, to the religion they're shooting at.
Okay.
But neither one of them, they're no longer Mormon. Either one of them, both of them have left the church, but they were raised Mormon, which I think gives it a little bit of that air of like,
It wasn't hostile. They even mentioned Book of Mormon. Book of Mormon is the like, I don't know if anybody's ever seen the Book of Mormon, but it manages to it's South Park. But it also manages to be like Mormon people go to see the Book of Mormon and they love it. They're just like, oh, yeah, something similar happened to me, you know. Yeah. Oh, dirty words, you know. Well, I guess, you know, hey, we're just checking this out for. It was not a hostile portrayal of Mormons. No. And I was very surprised because that's the easy route in stuff like that with any kind of like. You know, I mean, if they were like Scientology or something, you're almost 99%.
You gotta be careful with Scientology.
Crazy, but
you gotta be careful with that, right? Because you don't want to get literally. I'm not even making a joke. You don't want to get blacklisted in Hollywood for making an anti-Scientologist film.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah, you know? But then you give them another name. You do like that Bowfinger movie and call them Mindhead or something like that.
Yeah.
I know you guys don't live in the right market, but I'll have to see if I can find it. So on John Boy and Billy Big Show, they have Carl Childers. We'll do story time with Carl Childers. I tell you about it if and you like me to, you know. So it's Carl Childers from Sling Blade. And he does one where someone passes him Dianetics and he tells I can tell you about the Scientology if and you want me to. I'll have to find that because that's like the perfect. primer for Scientology, Carl Childers.
What are you doing with that Scientology, Carl?
I aim to kill you with it.
Some folks calls it magma. I calls it lava. story time with Carl Childers is like literally one of. I mean, my son loves the Big Show because we listen to it every morning driving into school and stuff. But Carl Childers does the one where. It's a great pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, that big round-headed boy, that mean girl, that dirty boy, that piano playing boy. He's funny. I don't mean funny, haha. I mean funny queer. You know.
I'm writing this down.
What'd you kiss my dog for? What'd you kiss my dog for? You know.
Oh God. So
anyway.
Yeah, so
I mean the thing with this movie, okay? So right, it wasn't I had not even seen the trailers. I literally knew it was a movie about Hugh Grant in it. It had a small cast. Topher Grace has a small part in it, which is odd.
It's almost meaningless. Yeah. I thought it was setting something up and it was nothing. It was maybe there to make you think they were set. I was out like when they started showing him and I was like, maybe this is some test that their church is a little goofy and puts them through some test and he's just like nervous his daughter. But no, it was just
I'll be honest with you, that I think his character is there to check a box, right? Because that would have been the first logical question I would have said is like, well, wherever they're going, they know everybody knows where they're going.
Right.
And they're due back at a certain time, or they have to check in.
Yep.
Right? So when they don't check in, the church elders or a deacon or somebody is
going to
come.
Somebody's going to.
So that's there to check a box.
Yeah. Toe for Grace has got to go get them.
But I mean.
So that go ahead.
They could have. I guess they had to have the scenes of him earlier to establish that he was her father. But at the same time, you know, you could have just had him show up at the door, you know, show I'm looking for my daughter and a friend, and because there wasn't really much to his character to that was built by having those earlier scenes. So I think they were just trying to put it in there as a little red herring to make you think that something.
I don't even think it was that. I think it was the checking the box thing. It's.
They could have checked the box in one scene, though. They could have just had a knock on the door, and then you're like, who is it, you know?
The whole time they talk about the church elders, and, you know, they do flash to him with his notepad scene, like, when they're supposed to be back.
Yeah.
And it all leads into, you know, it feeds into the no cell phone service.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. No cell service thing. Like, they would have called. So
right.
Clearly something's up.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and... Yeah, and then it's just more tension because he gets to the door and they're screaming and they just getting through all that.
Yeah. All the house. Metal. Yeah. So yeah.
I mean, but that's the thing about this movie, right? So I said I had no expectations going in because I literally didn't know anything about it. So I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, to me the film it already starts to me straining credibility fairly early because they don't insist on seeing his wife.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that they're I understand, they really want to get a baptism, but they're also, she's such a play it by the book, the young, you know, that it's like,
but they're also under pressure to be polite and
I understand that, but I'm just saying
right,
but I've also known enough missionaries that they won't do it if the rules are broken. They'll just say, look, hey, if your wife's not available, we can come back another time or something like that, and they would have tried to leave.
Right.
So it already strains credibility a little bit. And the problem I have with the film is that, yes, it's well acted, and yes, the characters are well developed, but it strains credibility more and more and more the longer you go, to where when you start looking back at it, you're like, okay, so he's doing all this just in case somebody comes by? Right? I mean, look, I get it. It's a horror film. You have to have certain suspensions of disbelief.
Well,
but
I mean,
there's also
been
a line
at
across
it
where
years.
It's like, that just... Right, he's literally been doing this for years. To what end? Right?
Right.
To what end? Because obviously no one's missed any of the women that he has locked up. Right? So where did, you know, how do we get all of them and no one's ever noticed them missing? There's never been an issue with that. And so, I mean, to me, I liked aspects of it. And I liked it more as it went on and it became, when it moved away from even pretending to be realistic. It's ridiculous.
By a point, you're like, okay, this movie is doing all this to make is theatrically making a point. You know, don't have
but if you go in with that, to me, it makes it a bit more palatable because the beginning of this movie, I'm like, okay, can we get on with it, please? Right, and there's a lot of words thrown at you. At least it was to me, and it's like, I get it, I get what we're doing here, and then you're trying. And maybe I'm playing the game, right? I'm trying to understand, okay, are we an anti-religious film? Or are we a pro-religious film, right? What are we trying to prove with this, right? So, I mean, to me, the scene that kind of made it was, you know, Reed's been going on and on and on talking about, well, you know, what about, this, you know, from this mythology and that mythology and this mythology and that theology and that theology. And then Barnes turns on him and just unloads. When she says, you asked why Judaism makes up such a small percentage, but don't even mention the Holocaust. You didn't touch on Islam at all. And that was like, okay, I get it now. Makes sense at that.
At that point, when he comes and he's like, have you ever heard of Monopoly? And he's setting up Monopoly. I'm like, oh my God, this is, he is, I'm trying to think, it was probably around the time Two True Freaks started, like the mid 2000s. That there was just this overwhelming YouTube presence of like really zealous atheist guys, bros who wanted to like, you know, debate people about atheism and stuff like that. And it like was, if you know, at first I'd watch it and I'd be like, oh, okay, this is pretty fun to watch, I guess. And then after about three times, it's like, okay, I get it, you know. All right, dude, calm down. And like, he was so excited to have someone to debate, and he thought he had two like little girls that he could just completely walk over, and he's so happy about it, and he's so happy to get it started. And I gotta say, I've met a bunch of people that are like that, you know, they have a thing and they want to debate it, and then they get some fresh meat and they're just chomping at the bit. And
we call them Star Trek fans.
And yeah. Well, these girls have that teenage that reaction to that, which is just like, oh, geez, Dad. You know, and they're smart enough to follow his logic and stuff, but they're just like, I don't want to play your stupid, you know, Monopoly metaphor game, Dad. I just, you know. But then they get pissed off enough, and then they start fighting back. And it's like, it was like a little internet battle, you know. She was like, I've got, what about, you know, what about this then?
Yeah, the what aboutisms start coming out.
Yeah.
It may also be just my background, but I really thought when we brought out Monopoly, it's like, if he brings out Catan, it's like, and you see the advantage of a European designed game. It's like, oh my God, dude, shut up. You know?
I was waiting for him to be like, you know, Led Zeppelin. You ever heard of White Snake?
So to talk about the music, hang on, Chris. I got to think about the music. Wait. So wait.
This would have been a different movie than Still of the Night playing.
Oh, hold on. Let me tell my one Still of the Night story. So So I was watching the video for Still of the Night on YouTube, as one does, and there was a commenter that said, and she said, you know, I think this song would be really good to like do a striptease to. You guys ever think about a girl doing a striptease to this song? And the first comment is, well, now I am. All right, carry on. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I have an Still of the Night story.
Okay.
We were there was a house party in the apartment building that I lived in, and like all the apartments were having a party, and there was this guy Larry, and he was a total like just got nowhere with the ladies, and he was drunk and sitting in a chair like with that like I may not be able to get up out of this chair look at his face. And in the Still of the Night is playing, and this girl goes, has anybody here ever made love to in the Still of the Night? And everybody's just looking around like, no. And Larry goes, I have.
Nice.
And she just looked at him and she goes, no, you have.
Poor Larry.
Wow.
Yeah.
As the kids would say, that is savage.
It was
apply the ointment directly on the burn.
You could see him just shrink into the chair, just like, yeah. And you could see him thinking, like, that's right, I haven't.
If my daughter was here, she'd say, yes, Queen Slay. Because that's
if John Slakes' leads can't get you laid, nothing will.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I don't care. The only white there's only one White Snake song, as far as I'm concerned, and that's Slide It In. Right to the top.
That's definitely a top 10.
All right. So, the end of the movie, obviously the end credits, that's Sophie. It's actually Sophie Thatcher, Sister Barnes, singing, Knocking at Heaven's Door, which is actually set over the tune of Fade Into You by Maisie Starr. Which is funny, because in the movie she says, I don't have a good singing voice. And, Sister Paxton says, no, you have a lovely singing voice. I think you do. And it was just kind of a, you know, play off of that. Mm-hmm. But, so when they say, you know, the fact that Creep by Radiohead is a reiteration due to the melody of The Air You Breathe by the Hollies, which actually is also a reiteration from Albert Hammond's 1972 song of the exact same name. So, like, the Hollies song.
Well, they didn't, and they never brought, why did they just go, what about Jose Feliciano singing The Air That I Breathe? you know, there's an iteration right there.
Right. What I'm saying is, but it's still itself is an iteration of a song.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. Like everything is just an iteration of an iteration of an iteration. Because as you like, I mean, it's true. Cause like, I mean, Haley was sitting down here at that point in the movie when they said, well, then you would know, was it Lainey Wilson who got sued because this is the same. And you know, that made Haley look up, you know, she wasn't even paying attention, but she hears someone she knows, you know, kind of thing. So, but it's just one of those things that like, you know, as you're, you know, it, I don't know. I mean, I know Luke said he had whatever the issues might be there, but I thought like a lot of the things were,
I mean, like I said, considering the majority. Okay. So it seems like in the modern era,
yeah,
right, horror falls into a couple of different buckets. Okay. You've got slick, mindless, mass consumption stuff that varies in quality, but it's right. Designed for a mass audience.
Right.
And then you get some of the stuff that we've talked about here. You've mentioned a few of them. You mentioned Long Legs, you mentioned Late Night with the Devil, a few of the other modern films that we've done that we've really liked.
Right.
But in the same bucket, you also get, you know, garbage like Hereditary. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's this idea that it to me it goes down to filmmaker's intent. If you're intending to make something for the mass audience, or if you're intending to make something because either you want to seem clever or you want to make a film that people say that's a guy who knows how to make film, or whatever your motivation is, right? That seemed to fall into this bucket. And we've seen some movies in that second bucket that are friggin' fantastic.
Yeah.
Right? But we've also seen some hot garbage.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
Because besides Hereditary, that's a little thing called walking the movie. Oh, yeah. Wait, it's called In a Violent Nature. Right, yeah. That's definitely that second bucket, but it's fucking terrible, if you'll pardon my language. Okay, so in this case, it's not that I didn't like Heretic. It's just Heretic is this weird place where it's in the middle.
Yeah,
because there are parts of this movie that it's like this is. I mean, first off, you got an actor the caliber of Hugh Grant, who most people dismiss because they think, oh, he just does comedy. But like we were talking about, Hugh Grant's a good actor. It's a good script. Even the two younger actors.
Well, there's a lot of comedy in his performance, but that makes it even creepier.
Right. Yeah. He's chewing the scenery, but not in the
not in a good way.
Not in the Shatner way.
Yeah. So he's not Mickey Blue-eyezing it, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
So it's in kind of a weird space where it's like there are elements that I liked and elements that I didn't like. And it's like it's hard to form an opinion. So ironically, it's almost as if you need to, instead of be influenced by others, form your own opinions and thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, no, I understand.
You can't be topical.
Right.
No, I'm mean, so, you know, it's like the entire theme of the thing.
Yeah. I know, it's just one of those things. It's like, I think because we've had so much stuff that is just, and not to be, but it's the idea of the reiteration, the same, like the remakes and the reboots and the rehash and the whatever, that nothing's original, nothing's new, nothing's whatever, that when someone tries something new, I mean, whether they hit or they miss, you know, kind of thing is one thing, but at least to go out and to give us something that we haven't seen already. Because I don't remember seeing a movie like this.
There's nothing. There's no movie like this. Yeah. About the closest thing that I could make from, and it's not a thematic connection, it's more like a setting and the way it's shot. You guys remember the movie Hard Candy?
Yes. With Ellen. Well,
it's kind of where she's where it's like the guy is going to prey on the underage girl, but it's actually she's setting a trap for him and all that. So it reminded me of that, just in kind of the setting and the claustrophobic nature of it. But there's not another movie that you can say, I got up out of the theater and walked out. So it's just Exorcist 2. That's all we're watching. You know, it wasn't a situation like that, right? So it absolutely, it certainly is original. And in fact, all of those movies in that second bucket that I've talked about are original in concept, right? And so I agree. I'd rather have something that aspires.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Sometimes watching something that's slick and mass audience is fun, but I'd rather watch a film that, if we're going to talk about it on the show, that aspires to something better, even if it doesn't necessarily hit it out of the park.
Right.
Well, yeah. And this also does, this is also a, there's two UFO movies and I can only remember the name of one of them. And I'm not even sure if I got it right exactly, but it's like no one can help you or no one will help you. And there was another UFO movie about a couple set in the 50s with a couple high school kids. One of them works on the high school radio station and the other one is a switchboard operator. And there's a UFO causing a ruckus in their town. And they're both reminded me of this because they both had like kind of open endings. They both kind of had teenage characters who were much more complicated than usually teenage character. One was like a young girl, like maybe in her early 20s. And
so one of them is called No One Will Save You. That's
No One Will Save You. Yes.
That's 2023. That was on Hulu, and I'm looking for the other one.
The other one is better than No One Will Save. No One Will Save You is kind of a spin on Nope.
Yeah. But you're not talking about Super 8, are you?
No.
Okay.
Because it sounds vaguely like Super 8.
Super 8. Yeah.
Think that was what you were talking about.
Yeah, but Super 8's that's a very different kind of movie. That's
No, Super 8 was the J.J. Abrams movie.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, this was around the same time as No One Will Save You. It was a similar, mostly straight to streaming movie. Very low budget, but very well done and good lead characters. But just, somebody with a little bit of money, but a really good script and really good acting and trying to do something that you haven't seen before. And that's the gold, I mean, some of them are going to fail, but I found since I've seen all the big horror movies, when you start digging into that world, into the past of horror movies, that's where you start finding the real gems, because people had to work. You have to work harder with that low budget to make it, to make it land. And I mean, this movie kept me involved every second of it. I love subject matter like this too, so it was right up my alley. The uncomfortable, like dealing with somebody who's creeping you out, but at the same time being somewhat charming. And, I love awkward interplay between generations. And I love stuff about, I love the religious stuff, especially when it's presented like this, where it's like, it doesn't get as wild and wacky as, say, Frailty.
Yeah.
Or what was the other one about the swingers with David Duchovny in it? But that was another one where, the end times were happening, coming out of nowhere, like all the religious stuff turned out to be like absolutely true. This one leaves it open-ended and just, it at least it's not hostile to religion.
I think you can read this film. To me, the two missionaries are portrayed as, in their own ways, devout, right? Paxton says it. I mean, she goes, prayer therapy doesn't work, but I'm praying because it makes me think of other people instead of myself, right? And so she is faithful.
Yeah.
And
she's just like, I just think it's a good thing for people to do. It's a good thing for people to do. And like, that's the thing about, like, especially like something like the Mormons. Like, I don't really have a lot of respect for the church as such and the hierarchy and the work, the machinations of it. But for the most part, almost universally, every person that's just like, I'm a, just a regular Mormon, has been like lovely, just very good
I'm
people.
I'm almost reminded, Chris, there's a story that you have to excuse the source, but I think it's a good story. So Bill Cosby was quoted on numerous times. Hold on a minute. It was quoted on numerous times as saying, if you want to clean up a neighborhood, you bring in the Muslims. He goes, bean pies and all. He says, because who are the people that are going to care about the people in the community and work towards actually making the community better? It's going to be the devout Muslims. And the point he was making is that when you have any group that actually cares about the community insofar as they want to be a positive influence, so they can, even if their motivation might be to get more people to come to their temple or their church or their mosque, right? That overall has a net positive effect.
Right.
Right. It's the same kind of idea. It's like whatever the you know, whatever they're doing in Salt Lake or whatever, that is above and beyond the pay grade of, you know, if you've got a family that you're friends with that's Mormon, right? That's above and beyond that. If they're trying to do their best to live by the codes and standards of their religion, they're probably pretty good people, right? Yeah. And you can say that, and I don't mean, and I don't want to start a holy war, but you can pretty much say that about most organized religions.
Yeah.
If you find someone who's a, I'll just pick, I'm in South Carolina. If you find a Baptist that tries to live by the Ten Commandments, they're probably a pretty good person, and they'll probably be straight with
you. They're probably better than most of the people you meet.
Yeah.
And it's like,
at least they're going to treat you better than most of the people.
Yeah. And you always have to, strip out the bureaucracy, you know, and just look at the person. I mean, yeah, that's just the way it is.
I mean, and that's true of so much, right? I mean, that's ultimately the thing. It's like, we all tend to agree on certain things. It's in the margins where things get a little dicey.
And any organization, you know, the time when you get to the churches, I mean, you're going to always have, just like any other population, you're going to have a share of assholes and people who are taking advantage of things and stuff like that. But like, I don't think any religion can get to a good size without basically making sure that all, you know, the majority of people that are in the religion are you know, along following the rules, you know, and that the rules are generally, you know, you don't see the, you know, Catholic Church doing wild cults, not these days, you know.
Not anymore, not like the good old days.
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes you see some some of the like mega churches like to get people riled up and angry and stuff like that. But the majority of people in there aren't going to church to get riled up and angry, you know, around the country, you know, just if you just conglomerate all the churches. Right. And, you know, and church people can be hypocrites too. But when you meet the ones that aren't hypocrites and are honestly trying to, like, you know, play and you can see they triangulate. They're like, I'm not going to be this preachy person, but I'm going to do it and live by example and stuff. Those are usually some of the best people you ever meet, you know, the solid people you'll ever meet. So
yeah,
as a like non-religion, that episode
of King of the Hill with the, yeah,
and I like the weirder religions, like
the youth pastor,
like the Mormons. I used to go watch the Hill Cumorah Fest every year because it was amazing. I didn't believe any of it. It was an amazing spectacle, and I appreciated the effort, like to see this Disney level show, like in a field. You know, drive an hour and a half from my house and sit in a field and watch something that you would like. I think a lot of the people that used to work on it were Mormon people that worked for Disney. So there was like this massive special effects,
the way that
4-hour spectacle of their, and I enjoy religions like that more than just, you know, you're just sort of run of the mill, like reading from the Bible churches. And I love when a movie does not just like portray them as a caricature, you know, especially if it's going to be Mormons, you know.
Yeah,
it's just too tempting to do that. And yeah, I loved it. It had that authenticity to it.
I like that it played fair with the characters. It played fair with our heroes. It played fair with our villain. Even if, like I said, there's parts where it's like, towards the end where it's like, okay, we're not trying to be realistic, but it played fair with the characters, which is what the purpose was, I think.
Right.
It presented an increasingly implausible scenario, but what we're interested in as the viewer is, you know, our missionaries' faith, essentially.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. I agree with you on that. It played fair with them. I like that.
I mean, there's no way anybody who's that malnourished was opening that door, dragging a dead body down there, replace so malnourished. There's no way. But the thing is, you need them to be in that state so that you believe that there is a resurrection occurring, that you like all those things have to be there to make it, you know, quote unquote happen. But we all like, there's no way in the world, because obviously the door was heavy enough where it took her yanking on to open it up. Like, it's not as simple as that, you know, kind of thing. So, but I mean,
you know what, you know what movie that part reminded me of? Remember the movie, The Prestige?
Yep. Yep.
Remember the end of The Prestige?
Yep.
Yeah, so I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen The Prestige?
I won't spoil it then.
That's a Christopher Nolan movie, right?
Yeah,
that's why I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Pretty on the surface, but it doesn't. They usually don't break down very well. At least in my experience.
I'm talking about a specific bit at the
just
end
at the
of
end
that film.
Yeah, which I like.
Which is yeah,
yeah.
And I can't dislike any movie with. Well, I'm not going to get. There's a historical figure that plays a role in that movie. And I can't dislike any movie.
So the funny part is The Prestige came out right around the same time as The Illusionist, and one of them is completely forgotten. The Ed Norton Illusionist, no one even remembers happened. So, and
Norton.
And that movie was huge at the time, you know. So you know.
Remember that missing episode where Jackie Gleason came on to Art Carney? Yeah. Norton,
Norton, you are a good looking man.
I've been watching.
You're
you,
a good looking man,
and I know you know.
I know.
You know. And I've been watching you.
I think they cut that one out on WPIX. They don't hear that.
Yeah, that was one of the lost episodes for sure.
Yeah, every once in a while they would show the Lost Honeymooners episodes, but that one never quite made it.
Yeah, it never made it to syndication.
Usually that was on either July 4th or New Year's Eve. The Lost. Stay up late and watch the Lost Honeymooners episodes.
Oh my
God.
All I can think of is that the.
When I say get fucking. Get fucking.
Red on I Love Ruth. I Love Lucy. Like, you hit her pretty hard there, Rick.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
None of that has anything to do with organized religion.
Though. Yeah, we are far afield right now.
As usual, but it's like this is it's hard because a lot of this film is dialogue based.
There's
a lot of things like the ending that I wouldn't want to spoil it, it had me guessing
is it real, is it about it.
The butterfly, is it the butterfly dreaming?
So I did want to ask, what is you guys' take on that specifically?
On the butterfly?
Last shot on the butterfly. Because I know what I think.
That's the dead missionary saying, I'm here, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Right. But
that's
then,
what they're implying.
Well, right. So the soundtrack swells and the butterfly lands on her hand and she had said that when I die, I want to be a butterfly that will follow my friends around. Then the soundtrack ends, and it's gone. And then roll credits.
And then what do you call it? Yeah. Then the.
Said,
well,
they were also talking about the philosopher who was, you know, saying I had a dream that I was a butterfly, or was I a butterfly dreaming that I was me?
Man.
So,
So,
but also we also talk quite a lot about that when you are dying and you are not getting enough oxygen because blood is not pumping. Your brain creates fantastic things. I think is the exact line.
Yeah.
So, is this a metaphor for her friend that came and saved her, and now it has flown away while it cuts to her face? Is this a hallucination because she is bleeding out and dying? Is this some mix of the two, right? Is this what the reality that she wants to believe,
right,
because of the ordeal and the trauma she's gone through?
Well, she escapes the basement with that, like, in a basement that's impossible to escape. She can't get out. She doesn't know how to open the front door, but she goes through the window, right? Or whatever. That's the,
through the window.
But like, how does she get out the window? Like, it's clearly too small. It's clear. Yeah. Like everything, nothing works, but that's what I'm saying. I think what you're getting at. And this is to me the actual ending of The Descent, the real ending of The Descent. She does not get out of the cave. And that's what we get. The American version, she gets out of the cave and she gets in the car and Juno's body's there and it cuts away. And then that leads to The Descent 2, where they go back. But in The Descent, the real cut of The Descent, the original cut, the European, she wakes up and she's still in the cave, and now she's gonna die. And that's her kind of, you know, whatever. But I think by leaving it open ended, what they were trying to do is get you to talk about it. I think we're doing exactly what they want. They want you to discuss it.
Yeah, right? I mean, honestly, after sitting with the characters for 2 hours, I was literally taking the literal interpretation. She got out, she earned that escape.
Yeah, and you could take it that way, 100%. You totally could. But I think Luke makes a good point: is that this could also be like, she never got out of there, and now she's hallucinating. Now she's whatever it might be, that, you know, she's now in that state where, because we never see her, it doesn't show her going back to the mission. It doesn't show her. She never interacts with anyone, you know, kind of thing. So this could be that. And, you know, but there's symbolism throughout the whole thing. So obviously, you know, the butterfly, all that stuff means all that stuff. They've tied it in. I don't know if you guys noticed, how many nails are in the board?
Three nails.
Right? And it's just a little thing that you don't necessarily see. They don't linger on it, but it's three nails. And that's the whole thing. Like, exactly like it's in you know, in the Bible kind of thing. So that's, there's so many.
I think one's interpretation of the ending, part of it, I'm not saying all of it, but part of it also, I think, depends on the faith of the viewer.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. What level of faith the viewer has. If you are someone who is maybe not devout but is faithful and believes, maybe you're more likely to think, yes, she did get out.
Right.
Right?
Well,
because her faith was rewarded. Whereas perhaps if you're an atheistic viewer, you might take it more as like, there's no way she got out. Right?
Well,
or she got out and she's bleeding to death now. I'm not saying that's absolute, but I think that plays a role in this.
Well, I think whether she got out or not doesn't really, like, I mean, whether she got out or not is like the surface level horror movie idea. But I think what I sort of got out of it was that her, even with both of them dying, and after saying no spoilers, but after both of them dying, neither of them. He did not achieve his goal. Their faith still, you know, even with his whole, like, I will prove that power is the true God, and, you know, people react like rats in Skinner boxes. At the end, you know, they killed him, and neither of them ended up in a cage acting out, you know, pretending to be the prophet for the next two girls that he lured in there, even in death she was sort of, you know, victorious. She was, even if she was dead, she was coming out hallucinating a butterfly, and in this like really almost artificial looking, like snowy, you know, very bright outdoor, very stylized. Even in the beginning when they were riding their bikes around, it looked like they were riding around dioramas. You know, like he had of his house, you know, that when they were riding around the town. But I think it was about her being victorious, you know, whether she lives or dies. They did not bow to the power of Hugh Grant.
but isn't it also, though, too, like the idea that he thinks he's in control. He thinks he's in control and everything. And when Sister Barnes questions him, she sees his tells. He gets distracted. So they now know that they can take the control back. And even though, and what happens is they are going to set him up, and she's going to say, you know, holy, or, you know, my, you know, what, magic underwear. And she's going to stab him when he's not looking. And what happens before she can finish the word, he slits her throat. Right. Kind of thing. And you're like, oh no, maybe they don't have the control of this. But the entire time, like, you still know she has, but you forget that she has the weapon in her pocket. She has the letter opener in her pocket. You kind of start forgetting that it's there, because now you're getting wrapped up in like all these women and all this whatever. And she still is setting him up to get him close enough so she can stab him in the throat.
you know, kind of thing. And it's like, but it's that power struggle back and forth that you see at the end that, you know, that to me, I think, and this is, I kind of knew it was coming. And when I first saw the movie, and obviously I saw watched it again today, I knew it, I already seen it. When Barnes is able to use the board that they, it's like Chekhov's gun. They freaking show it to me. It's got to happen. So the whole point was, you're like, oh, there's the board. Okay. But they got the letter opener. So now it's going to be the board. But wait, they didn't use either of them. He got her with the box cutter. But and you're like, wait, oh, but she got him with the thing. So you're thinking like, okay, so now Sister Paxson's got to have to use the board to do this. And of course, it's not Sister Paxson. It's Sister Barnes who the whole time was there. You forget she's there because she's
dead.
Jigsaw. She's Jigsaw in the original Saw. You forget that the dead body is laying in the middle of the room, but he's not dead. That's Saw. That's the original Saw. When the whole movie is about them going back and forth, and you think the killer is the guy at the apartment who's just the employee, whatever, the janitor, right? Yeah, the orderly, exactly. Sorry. But you know, but the thing is, you forget that Jigsaw's there, and when finally he gets up, you're like, what? He's been there the whole time. Right? You forget Sister Barnes. You see Sister Barnes. She's laying there dead in the floor, but you forget she's there. And you're like, okay, how is she going to get out of this? Is he going to really let him kill her? Like, he's bleeding out. And just to totally, like I said, this is definitely a movie that's different than anything else I've seen, at least in a long time, by way of like, it didn't insult your intelligence with the characters being so like mind-numbingly stupid that you're like, oh my god, come on. Like some of the stuff, whether it's plausible or not, like, and again, sometimes you have to kind of check your plausibility at the door, right, kind of thing. I don't think they were written in a way that was insulting at all. If you don't believe the situation that's happening, the characters themselves didn't turn 180 in the middle of the story and all of a sudden starting a different way. Where like, you know, the old, you know, it's that Scream, right? You know, the girl should be running out the door when she's running up the stairs. Well, what happens? Sydney goes to run out the door, but she can't, so she runs up the stairs. Like she's forced to do something she doesn't want to do because she knew what to go do. These girls, you know, are they put themselves in a bad situation. And I know, Luke, as you said, that the missionaries wouldn't, you know, allow this kind of stuff to happen. But if they did... And again,
the way the characters are written, all three of them, is very strong, and they are on point the entire time.
Yeah.
Right. It's not the characters that become unbelievable.
Right.
It's the
some
the,
of the situations
the,
that
the unfolding labyrinth of this guy's house and the logic that starts to go like. But I think that's also the point when is one's faith tested? One's faith is tested when presented with things that cannot be explained otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like it's easy to have faith when things go as you expect them to.
Yep.
It's harder to have faith when it's like, what the hell did I just walk into?
Yeah. Isn't that
right?
I'm trying to remember what's that from? I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was something exactly like that idea. Like it's easy, it's to whatever at this, but it's hard when you have. I don't remember what that is. It ties back.
It's like the Poseidon Adventure, right? You know, you have a ministry of strength, right? And I don't have a ministry of strength. The two, you know, the Gene Hackman and the other priest on the Poseidon Adventure, you know.
No, I'm trying to remember. It's something else. You'll
freeze
too.
To death. I know it's not what you. I know it's not what you're thinking of. But
yeah, it'll come to me later. But it also ties into. It's very much Sherlock Holmes, right? You know, when you've eliminated all the anything that might be.
Yeah, whatever you eliminated the impossible, whatever's left, however improbable, must be true.
Must be true, right? And it's like, you know, you start getting to the point where you're like, okay, there's no way this could happen, but if it did. Then this could unfold, you know, you have to start accepting those things. It's kind of like and this movie's much better than the movie I'm going to name in a second, but it's much more like when I watched Barbarian for the first time, there's stuff in there. You're like, but you know, I'm buying into it because this is where we got to go with this to get, you know, with the movie, you know, thing. So, but.
Yeah, anyway. and a successful movie will have you rolling with it, you know.
Yeah,
if it can get you rolling through it till the end, then it's okay. You can nitpick afterwards, but But this, I mean, from beginning to end, this had me, you know, engaged and
waiting
to see what was coming next, you know.
Yep, yep.
And it was totally unpredictable what would come next.
And I think, like you said, Jay, the lack of, there is some gore in this film, but it's not
very little.
Certainly not along the level of like The Substance, if we're talking about.
Oh my God, no. No.
So this is one, like you had said, that suggested to watching it with your wife. And I think this one, if you have a partner or spouse who's not into horror, this might be one that you can get away with because it is psychological.
Yeah, I finished watching this and told Maureen, like, you should check this out.
Right. You know, so I think it is, you know, sometimes we watch stuff and it's like, yeah, if you've got a partner who's not into horror, don't watch this, right?
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of the rub with The Substance, right? From a narrative standpoint, I think, you know, a lot of non-horror fans would like it, but it's going to be tough to watch that third act. Yeah. Whereas this one, I think you could deal with it.
That's
aside, our mom said that. She said that because she and they, you know, our parents watched The Substance. She said as soon as she came back and her finger was screwed up, she'd be done. Right?
Yeah, most people would. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, so we haven't talked about, and I said when we watched, like Dad didn't like The Substance, and Dad didn't like this movie. But I think some of that has to do with
this
the fact
that... This is not a movie Dad's going to like.
But I think is, like, the only movie my dad has liked since everything's kind of happened was Wild Robot. Like, he hasn't liked anything. So I think part of the problem is now how we're looking at things is a little different. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know if Dad would have enjoyed this movie, like 2 years ago. Can I think? Like, I don't think this is the kind of movie Dad would enjoy. I think he would appreciate the acting, but I don't think this is a movie he would enjoy just because it's like, all right... Like, okay, I don't care. Not that the acting wasn't good. It's just not his cup of tea, you know? Whereas he would enjoy, not saying this has to be all action and whatever, but he enjoys movies that are, you know, deeper, but like not necessarily this way. Like he likes his things, whatever. But it's just funny is the horror movies, the movies that we looked at as being the best movies of 2024, right? I mean... The alien Romuluses of the world exist, and we understand that's much more mainstream kind of thing, right? We get it, right? And not that Alien Romulus wasn't good, because it's enjoyable, and it's actually a pretty good Aliens movie. But, like, the movies that are just being, not different for the sake of being different, but just telling a story that we haven't seen already. Even if something feels slightly familiar, like an iteration of something else, it still is unique in its own way. It's something I haven't seen. It's not boring. It keeps you engaged. The characters are something you can do. I mean, you know, Kelly watched The Substance with me. And up until literally when all hell breaks loose in the third act, she's enjoying that movie the entire time. She's enjoying it. And the only problem was it was so gross at the end. She was like, it's so gross. I just don't like all the gross things. And I'm like, oh, I get that. I do. But I also understand that, you know, you've enjoyed the story so far. And at some point that movie, and let's be honest, The Substance had to kind of get gross at the end. It had to. There's no way that movie ends any other way.
It wasn't anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. And it had to go there because we're like, look, we are on a slippery slope and they are looped up and ready to go.
Yeah. You know? Maureen started watching it about 15 minutes before it went full Grand Guignol. And I was like, well, I mean, did you enjoy the 15 minutes before this? She's like, yeah. I was like, well, I mean, this is where it was headed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that's the whole thing though, too. I think, you know, if you haven't seen Heretic, it's well worth the watch. It's like Luke said, it's on whatever they call HBO Max
it's
Plus.
It's still Max. I think they're changing that again. Back to the original. It's currently still Max and it is on there.
Yeah, it's on there.
HBO Max again, I think.
It's an A24 movie. So just knowing that it's A24. So when you, for those of you who are not in the know, when you hear A24 or Neon, get ready for something that you ain't seen in a while. You know, there's something different. Neon is what Long Legs was. Neon is Immaculate's Neon, I'm pretty sure. Like A24 was, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, and again, even if you don't like all the A24 stuff, A24 definitely pushes. You know, what it's going to, you know, present to, so to speak. But anyway, so check it out, folks. I think
So is this on, let me ask you a question, Jay. You usually know the answer. Mm-hmm. Is this on disc yet? Or is this
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
on streaming.
No, no, it's on disc. So I have.
Okay.
So I picked up. I mean, I had a bootleg from Across the Ocean when it wasn't available anywhere, and it wasn't playing in theaters around here. So I had I got a bootleg to so I could see it, and then it came out in it has a 4K and it has a Blu-ray. There's a steelbook, a special edition, and a whole everything like kind of thing. But there's a regular Blu-ray of it, and there's a and a 4K restoration, but the 4K of it also, which is out there. It's not available, but it's definitely one of those movies that I don't think this is gonna play. I mean, it's not streaming anywhere. That's not like, it's not like on, like, it's not just like on Tubi or something like that. But I think this is one of those, because it's A24.
No, I mean, it's no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's new. It's also, yeah, still.
Give it time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still, no, new, right.
Right. But I'm saying, but it's A24, and I don't know who has their, yeah, after, yeah, it leaves Max, where it goes kind of thing, but it's available, and the Blu-ray is beautiful, but you know, so, I mean, I bought
well, this streaming. This struck me as, well, but the thing about it is that a lot of times with horror films, especially on the physical releases, right, it's because you want the effects, yep, and stuff in, yep, that high, yep, fidelity, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, it doesn't. Would play probably just as well on VHS.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right. Yep. Billy Bob, yep, Thornton's opinions of VHS being understood and agreed with, but you know, I think just from a story standpoint, it doesn't need to be that high fidelity disc, no, right? But it's nice to have anyway, just like, well, it's, yeah, nice on the shelf and you can always pop it in and all that.
I mean, it's nicely shot, and the yeah, interior design of his house is amazing. I love looking around his house at all the stuff he's got up once you get into the interesting part of the house. And like, you know, the stuff, there's a beautiful special effects shot where the woman's, yes, where they put the woman in his diorama of his house, yeah, and then her character comes in the door of the room where the diorama is. It's just a nice, yep, and that's where yeah, you're like, that was the point where I was like, all right, we can definitely just like not really worry about like how realistic this is.
Yeah.
After this point,
you know what that actually reminded me of? Do you remember many, many years ago, long ago, we watched
Malignant,
Kill Baby?
Reminded me of, yes, one Malignant, of the Freddy Krueger movies.
Well, even before that, we watched Kill Baby Kill by Mario Bava.
Yeah.
And do you remember this? There's a scene in Kill Baby Kill where after the guy is in the house and he learns that, oh, that this is the room with all her dolls, she loved all her dolls, and then one of them is her corpse, and right, he's chasing through the house, and he keeps running through the same room over and over and over, and then as he's leaving the door at the other side, he's entering the door on the other side.
Oh,
of the
yes,
room,
yes.
And he catches himself, right? You can run away from yourself, but eventually you'll catch yourself, right? So that's what it just reminded me of, just, yeah, from a thematically, it's like, okay, are you... You're in his model because you're part of the game, but you're also the game itself.
Right.
Right. So it's, yeah, like, man, that was wild. I was not expecting that.
No, that was just, that, yeah, that was just like, oh yeah, here's the filmmaking dick swinging right now. And it was just like, ooh, yeah, that's kind of nice. But I mean, it still worked thematically, because then she pulls apart the diorama to find the escape hatch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So. Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, like, It's like a parfait. It's got layers, you know, kind of thing.
Right? Soda onions.
You know, I like track. I like a nice parfait. And nobody
parfait.
Said that.
Like, nobody ever said, man, I don't like no parfait.
So anyway, yeah, folks. So definitely check it out.
In the morning, we're making waffles.
In the morning, we're making waffles. So, you know, definitely worth checking out. Definitely worth your time. You know, we again, I think if you're listening to us talk about these, and if you're listening to this, we've hit, I think, some of the more, I don't know, the original
cream, like, always rises to the,
right,
top.
Right, right. Yeah. But I'm saying, I think we've talked about some of the most original horror movies of the last year. I think we've hit pretty much all of them. Outside of, like, I mean, like Immaculate, I covered on Bots, Bugs, and Babes and stuff like that, which was as so funny because everyone said it was just a ripoff of The Exorcist, or no, The Omen, excuse me, not The Exorcist, The Omen. And I was like, actually, they're very different. But you know, kind of thing. But it's one of those things as you start going through and looking at that kind of stuff, I think if you have heard us talk about movies before, we and know where we're coming from and where we're grounded and stuff. If we say to you, hey, this is well acted, this has got this punch, this has got this, it's got that, I think you can take our word for it that it
you
does.
Can listen to us.
Yeah. But I mean, you again, you don't have to agree with us all the time, but I'm saying it. But if we say X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z are going to be there, you know, kind of thing. And whether you like it or not, it's your call because everyone has their own taste, you know, kind of thing. It's why there's 31 flavors. But the idea, though, is that, you know, we're saying to you, this is an original idea. This is something you haven't seen. This is different. This is presenting this in the right way. These are strong characters. This is this, you know. But yeah, make your own choices. And we'd love to hear from you. What is it? Freakvault at gmail.com.
Freakvault, yeah. All one word, at gmail.com.
There we go.
So. And we don't have anything in the inbox. So your email will jump straight to the top if you send us something. So.
Number one with the ball.
No, you beat me to it.
Yeah, and if you know any of like kind of sleeper, low budget, you know, straight to streaming sort of horror movies that
well one I will say this, the setup kind of reminded me of there's a little teeny tiny independent movie probably from about 10-15 years ago called The Perfect Host with Niles from Frasier.
I've seen that. Yeah,
so I kind of was getting similar vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Yeah, that was a Blockbuster special. They had that on the shelf at Blockbuster, and they had that always, or yeah, it was like Blockbuster at the very end. And then it was because that's old enough where that was there. And then it was like real big on like Netflix, not Netflix, but like more streaming services. Yeah. It was one of the ones they would always suggest. You might be interested in this. I'm like, why? Because I just watched a movie about people killing each other. Oh, it's like when I watched The Collector, and then it says you might like The Collection. I go, you think I might like the sequel to this movie? Of course I like the sequel, and I'm waiting for the third one to come out this year, The Collected, if it ever gets made, and then we can finally finish the trilogy. So anyway, check it out.
Sorry, that just makes me think of Dr. Robotnik from Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Hmm.
When his assistant's like, I just wanted to know if you wanted a latte.
Yeah.
Do I look like an imbecile? Of course I want a latte. I love the way you make them.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
I love you, Dr. Zaius.
We used